introduction. It's so good to be with you here. I have a lot of fond memories, and I was just telling someone that it really feels like I came home. And for those of you that don't know me, well, I don't know, you'll just get to know me today, that's all. But it is good to be here. And I am a missionary to the Netherlands now. For 29 years, I was doing children's evangelism, pastoring at a couple of different churches, teaching at Zion. And then only 3 years ago did I move to the Netherlands. 3 years ago. So I am the poster child for changing your life midstream. Right? I mean, I was a middle-aged woman and moved over to Holland. I was once preaching in Holland being translated, and I said something about being a middle-aged woman, and it was translated as a woman from the Middle Ages. And I said, no, I'm not that old, but, you know. And so it is good to be here. I want to tell you how this is going to end this morning. Our theme is lost. Not lost like lust on the road, which is frightening enough, and we'll talk about those kinds of losts, but lost from chapter 15 in the book of Luke, the three parables about the lost sheep, the lost coin, and the lost son. Lost and you don't know it, lost and you're helpless to do anything about it, and lost and you want to be lost. But I want to tell you at the end of the service what I'm going to be asking you. Now, Pastor Glenn said that I made a deposit here while I was at harvest time, and I'm glad that I did. And he said that I'm here to make another deposit today, but truthfully, I'm here to make a withdrawal. That's why I'm here. I'm here for three reasons. Number one, I'm asking you to pray, and you'll hear some specific prayer requests today, two specific prayer requests. The second, I'm asking you to give money. Now, this church supports me monthly, and I thank you for that. But they're going to be taking an offering for me for a special project that I'll tell you a little bit more about. And it's a tangible way for you to give money. Now, I wasn't going to say this, but I decided to say it. I didn't say it in last service. But there's a $20,000 project that where I need $20,000, about 12 to 15,000 euro. And I asked the Lord to give me $10,000 from harvest time. It might be crazy, but that's what I asked the Lord for. And I pictured myself afterwards, tomorrow, calling my friends in Holland and saying, guess what? This one church that I went to this weekend, they gave us half the money to rebuild the center in Lissa. I pictured myself saying that. And so, hey, that's the second thing I'm here for. And by the way, I'm allowed to talk about money. Some people feel real funny about it, but I'm a Jew from Brooklyn. So yeah, it's real easy for me. I say, give money, write out big checks. Come on, you know, it's okay with me. The third thing's a little bit different. I'm looking for people because of another project that I'm doing that will be completed in about 2 years. I need some people to come and help me for about 2 or 3 years. So I'd like you to sacrifice your life for 2 or 3 years and come over to Holland and join me, okay? Thanks, all right. And I'll tell you a little bit more about that, but that's how it's going to end. But today we're talking about lost. Now let me tell you, when I first moved to Holland a mere 3 years ago, I was lost. I really was. I'm a single woman. I have no children, so I moved there alone. Although I work with 6 former Zion students of mine, very cool. And I've made a lot of friends. And after 3 years, I finally speak Dutch. Man, it's an ugly language. A lot of yeah in the language. And it's not exactly a handy language. Like, I can go all around the world and everybody knows Dutch. Who speaks Dutch, right? The Dutch, maybe some people in the Bahamas. And some and Afrikaans is very, it's a butchered Dutch, is what Afrikaans is. And so a few places around the world. But I felt a little bit lost when I first moved there. Like, I had to learn a whole bunch of different things. Like, how warm is it in the sanctuary today? It's about 20, 21 Celsius. I bake my cakes on 180. right? Yeah, it's not Fahrenheit. And I had to figure out that this is about 30 centimeters. Yeah, go change your whole life like that. Or, first time I went food shopping, totally lost. I walked into the supermarket, which looks similar to ours, except everything's in the wrong place. For us, anyway. Everything's in the wrong place. And I had a little panic attack because I couldn't recognize anything. I recognized milk. I recognized eggs. But all of a sudden, I was looking for garlic powder, which, by the way, is called knoflook powder, in an envelope, no pictures. And I walked out of the supermarket, went home, shut the door in my apartment, cried for about an hour, turned the television on and watched American television in English. Or the day I had to go to Utrecht by train. I went to the train station, managed to buy my tickets from the machine, which was a miracle. Got my tickets. It told me to go to track 6. I'm standing at track 6 like a good little Dutch girl. And I'm standing there, and the train comes, and I get on. But oh, but there was an announcement a few minutes before that the train to Utrecht had changed to track 8, but it was in Dutch. So I got on the wrong train and didn't get to Utrecht, and I traveled almost all day trying to get back home. I got back home, little panic attack, closed my apartment door, cried for about an hour, turned on the television and watched American television in English. But the worst moment I had that first year was when I was invited to a wedding and I wanted to buy a new dress. Well, I had bought dresses, you know, many times before. So somebody guided me to this area, told me about this area where there's underground parking. Couldn't find the underground parking. Found above ground parking. Didn't know how to use the meters. Nobody spoke English. Then finally somebody who spoke English told me how to use the meters. Then she told me it was 1 hour parking only. So I went in, couldn't read the directory sign, panicked because I realized it was Monday morning and the stores don't open on Monday in Holland till 1. Went out to my car, got back in the car, drove home, closed my door, cried for about an hour. What? That's right, watched American television in English. So that was very difficult for me, but I will tell you now, very happily, that I fit in Holland. I am so blessed that I am in Holland. And a lot of missionaries will come and you'll hear about the sacrifices and how they left everything familiar and family and friends. And I figure I had paid my dues before I got there for the first 29 years, and now I feel like this is my reward. God has blessed me, and I have found favor with the government, favor with churches, favor with my neighbors that I don't deserve, honestly. And I am so blessed, and I am so happy to be there, and I thank you so much for your support, and I thank you in advance for the $10,000 that I'll receive in the offering a little bit later. But the hardest part for me, as I told you, was the language. The language was the toughest thing to get over. I'm fairly fluent in Dutch now, although I still can't preach in Dutch because my grammar, I still make a lot of mistakes and it's way too distracting. It would be like me saying to you, happy am I here to be. You get it, but it's like all of a sudden your brain has to change. So my grammar is not so great, but I'm fairly conversational and fairly fluent in Dutch. But I thought it might be fun this morning if I gave you a Dutch lesson. Would you like to learn a little Dutch today? I think it would be a blast. Okay, the first part of the lesson, it's pretty easy. There are some words in Dutch that look and sound just like English words. They're both Germanic languages, like the word help. To say help in Dutch, you say help. Or the word python. Python in Dutch is python, which comes in really handy in case there's a python. You can yell, help, python! And every Dutch person knows exactly what you're talking about because those are Dutch words as well. Then there are some words in Dutch that are not exactly the same, but they are easily recognizable when you see them, like the word, what is it? Yeah, milk, right. It's melk, pronounced melk, but it's milk. Or this word, Do you know it? Length, right? Pronounced lengta. Or this word. Boat. Sorry, I did that to fool ya. The double O is a long O. Boat, as in Corey Ten Boom. That's how you say her name. Now, there are some words in Dutch that actually represent what they are better than the English words do. Like this cute little word here. The word is knuffel. Can you say that with me? Knuffel. You say the K in the N, as in knish, you know. Knuffel, which, by the way, I haven't had one since I've been back. Oh, I'd love a good Nathan's Knish with a little mustard. Okay, so anyway, sorry, I diverted. Knuffel means hug. Like, yeah, isn't that a nice word? Like, come here, give me a knuffel. Or group knuffel. It also means stuffed animal. So you see how it's a little bit more descriptive? It's a nice word. Or this word. Kikker. A kikker is a frog. Huh? Doesn't that make sense? Little kicking animal there. Then there are some words that don't sound anything like what they actually mean. Here's a good one for you. Makkelijkste. Can you say that? Makkelijkste. It means easiest. Yeah. It's makkelijk, makkelijker, and makkelijkste. Easy, easier, and easiest. And then there's the word slim. Nice, easy word. Slim in Dutch means smart. So you can be as fat as a house, but if you're smart, you can tell people you're slim, and you're not lying. You go, yeah, I'm slim. Come on, I'm slim. And then there are some sentences in Dutch that are easily recognizable when you read them or if I say them to you. If I said to you, waar is mijn boek? What am I asking you? Exactly, where is my book? Waar is mijn boek? But then there are some sentences in Dutch that you know somebody's asking you for something, but you have no idea what it is. Waar is mijn sleutel? Waar is mijn sleutel? Come on! I can't start my car without it. Yeah, the key, the key. Where's my key? Sleutel doesn't sound anything like the word key. But my favorite are these small words that are joined together to make incredibly long words that totally freak you out. Like this word means quarterly. It's driemaandelijks, 3 months like. Drie maandelijks. Huh? They join those three words together. But then about 8 or 9 months ago, I got a letter in the mail that said, Mevrouw Mensch, u heft en I have a belangstelling registratiegesprekken. It's true. I called up my friend Ingrid. I said, Ingrid, I have a belangstelling registratiegesprekken. What do I have? She says, oh, don't worry. You have an important tax registration meeting. That's what it means. Kind of freaks you out. But those aren't the kinds of lost things that we're talking about today. We're talking about lost from God, that we are separated from God. Well, we were. Well, maybe there are some here today who might be visiting or with friends, and you're still separated from God. Well, today you can be found. Jesus wants to find you. And the first loss that we're talking about today is lost, and you don't even know it. That's the story of the lost sheep from Luke chapter 15. So there was a shepherd. Oh, so yeah, thank you for bringing that to my attention. No, I want that. I want that scripture. I forgot about that scripture. Forgive me. Luke 19:10, the goal of Jesus. He said, for the Son of Man has come to seek and to save that which was lost. That's what Jesus said. Now, I have that up there before I tell the story of the lost sheep, because if that was the goal of Jesus and we are followers of Christ, what's our goal? If we follow Christ, we're supposed to do the same thing. We're supposed to tell people about God's love. It's not about achieving. It's not about making money. It's not about having fame or power. it's this. This is our goal in life. And that's true. So now let me get to the story of the lost sheep. There was a shepherd who had 100 sheep. And he's counting his sheep one day, and he notices there's one missing. He's only counting 99. Oh, no. He says to, I don't know, maybe there was somebody else there. Oh, no, Bernie is missing. So he goes and looks for Bernie, and he looks all over. Now, Bernie was probably gone because, oh, he saw a pretty little flower, or maybe there was a kicker jumping around, and he was following the little kicker. But he was lost and didn't even know it. And the shepherd found the lost sheep and brought him back to the fold. Now, this is a parable. A parable is a story that is not necessarily true, but it has a true meaning. And the true meaning is this. Jesus is the good shepherd. And he will look for the one lost soul. So if you are praying for somebody who is lost, you keep praying because you're not the only one concerned. And you're not even the one who's most concerned. Jesus is looking for that lost sheep. Doesn't even know he's lost. So I thought I would tell you a story about something that really happened to me last summer. It's good to tell stories. But first, I want to tell you a little bit about the country that I live in. A few facts about Holland. By the way, it's called Holland and the Netherlands. The Netherlands is listed as a secularized country, a country with little or no religion. Used to be that it was a Christian nation, but now less than 2% are registered Protestants. I didn't say followers of Christ. I said registered Protestants. More than 60%, almost 70% of the people are atheists. Yeah, this was a country that was the seat of church history. Hundreds, maybe even thousands, I don't know, cathedrals, stands all around Holland, beautiful places that used to preach the gospel, that used to send out missionaries all over the world. And now there are museums. And for €8, you can take a tour because they don't preach the gospel anymore. The country has lost God. And you know, it's not like it's a spiritual battle type country when you go to Haiti, when you go to some of these places. But if I didn't know that it was theologically incorrect, I would tell you that it feels like the Spirit of the Lord has departed. It feels empty, like a vacuum. They're lost, and they don't know it. Something happened over the years that drew them further and further and further away from God. So here's what happened to me last summer. How many of you know who Corrie Ten Boom is? Okay, about half of you. She lived during World War II. She was around 50 years old when the war started, and she and her family lived in Harlem, Holland, and they hid Jews during the Holocaust. They saved approximately 800 Jews over the course of not even 2 years. Yeah, maybe about 2 years. And the pictures I have here, the bottom is her house in Harlem. The top is her bedroom where they used to hide the Jews. Built a fake wall. They broke it open just so that you could see inside. Of course, it was bricked up during that time. And the Jews would slip underneath the bottom of the closet. A wall would fall behind them so it looked like a closet. And 6 Jewish people could hide behind that wall. Well, they were discovered, and not the Jews, but the family. They never found the Jews that were hiding there when the Gestapo raided them. But the family was arrested, taken to concentration camps. The father and the sister died, but Corrie survived Ravensbrück, a concentration camp in Germany. And after she was released, see, she used to preach the gospel. She was a strong Christian, even in the concentration camps. She went all around the world and preached the gospel to more than 60 countries, wrote books that have been translated into many languages, and she died in the 1980s. She was 91 years old. Now, what happened is she sold the house right after World War II. But in the 1980s, a man in America bought the house and restored it and opened it up as the Corrie Ten Boom Foundation. And you can take a 1-hour guided tour where the gospel is preached. It's fantastic. So whenever someone would come to visit me, we'd go to Harlem, 20 minutes from my house, and we would go to the Corrie Ten Boom house. Very powerful. So last summer, I heard they were looking for English-speaking tour guides. I said, ooh, pick me. And so I went, I interviewed, I could give one day a week. It's a volunteer position, but I could give one day a week. And I got it. They said, start tomorrow. I said, okay, so I didn't sleep all night. I was doing all kinds of research on World War II and the Ten Bohm family. And I got there in the morning with my little note cards. And my first group was about 15 people. And in that group was this gigantic guy from Ireland, 6'7", 300 pounds, biker dude with the vest and the chains, real tough guy. So we're going through the house on the little windy Dutch staircases, and we're up in the bedroom. And I'm telling this story about how Corey, in Germany, after she was released, was preaching a sermon about God's forgiveness. And she spotted a Nazi guard that was responsible, partly responsible for her sister's death. Apparently, he had become a Christian after the war. And he walks up to her afterwards and says, I have asked God to forgive me for what I have done. He has. But now, Miss Tenbohm, I ask you, will you forgive me? And she forgave him. I tell that story. I look over at the big Irish guy. He's crying. He stops me and he says, Judy, I need forgiveness. And I said, okay. And he drops to his knees and crosses himself. And he says, pray with me now. And I looked at the rest of the group and I said, is that okay? I said, yeah. And I prayed with him and led him to Christ right there in that room, right there in that room. Now, you want to know the really cool thing? I would give usually one day a week, four tours a day, the whole summer. And there were only about two tours when somebody did not come to Christ. Yeah. Yeah. Is that cool? And not just me. The other guides there too. You want to know why? Because they were lost and they didn't even know it. In darkness until they realized there's light. You see? They came because they were interested in World War II history or the Holocaust history. And here they come and they find Jesus. Yeah. So the second kind of lost is lost and you're helpless to do anything about it. The story that goes along with this is the woman who had the lost coin. She had 10 coins, one was lost. She lost that one coin and it meant a lot to her. So she searched all over the place for that lost coin and she couldn't find it. She was frantic. And finally, after I don't know how long of searching, she found that coin. But she didn't just do this. Whew. Mm-mm. She went all over the place and she rejoiced. She said, hey, guess what? I found my coin. Rejoice with me. I found my coin. Come on, let's party. I found my coin. Yeah. So it's a parable, remember. A story that's not necessarily true, but it has a true meaning. And the meaning is this. When one person repents, when one person comes to God, all of heaven rejoices, every angel and the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. So I cannot tell you stories like I get emails. I was in India and 5,000 people were saved. I was in Africa and 400 blind people can see. I can't tell you those stories about Holland, but I could tell you about one big Irish guy. And all of heaven rejoiced the day he fell to his knees in that room. Yeah. So let me tell you a little bit about the small country that I live in. First of all, there are only 16 million people, and it's twice the size of New Jersey. It's a very small country. Out of those 16 million people, there are about 1 million who are Muslims, and that number might be larger than that because I've been using that statistic for about 3 years. But the scarier thing is 1 million are drug addicts and prostitutes. Prostitution is legal. You have to be 14 to be a prostitute. And there are very few pornography laws, although there are some with child pornography. Nudity, there are no nudity laws. Not a problem with going on the street because nobody walks around naked. But the beaches or the billboards or everything else there, It's a country that's gone to pot, literally. Pot and hash and some synthetic drugs are legal. You go to the coffee shops and buy them by the gram or by the joint. I have a menu on my poster outside if you want to see it. If it says coffee shop, don't go in. Go to the cafes, but not the coffee shops. And you know, hard drugs are not legal, but they're very easy to come by. You're never arrested, and the government has lots of programs for you that help you. Less than a 2% success rate. Terrible. It's gone wild. The country has gone wild. But in the north of Holland, in a city called Vlaardingen, there is a teen challenge center that can only house 20 men, but they have a 93% success rate. And in Amsterdam itself, there's a place called Victory Outreach. They're also a Christian organization, and they have a center that can hold about 20 men, and they have a very similar success rate. So that's why I wanted to share with you about St. Joseph's. It's the building right in the middle of the picture, and you cannot see all the other buildings surrounding it that are attached to it. It used to be a monastery, and it's been vacant for about 3 decades. And a few years ago, it was deemed a historical monument. It's in the worst neighborhood of Amsterdam. So nobody wants to buy it, and because it's a historical monument, it cannot be torn down. And so the government says, well, you know what? We'll just give it away. If somebody has good use for it, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, we'll just give it away. Ooh, ooh, pick me. So me and my little posse got together. We wrote up a 20-page proposal, sent it in with several, like 9 or 10 other ministries, maybe 12 other ministries, and we sent it in, and it sits now on the desk of the government with 3 other proposals, waiting for them to make a decision. It's my first prayer request to you. I want St. Joseph's. I want St. Joseph's. It will be a teen challenge crisis center, a counseling center, a children's theater 3 times a year with productions. It will be after-school programs for kids at a cafe on the weekend and concerts and other things that will happen there. So that is my request. I want St. Joseph's. Got it? Write it down if you need to. Judy wants St. Joseph's. And then that's also why I need you in a couple of years. I need you to help me at St. Joseph's for 2 or 3 years. I need counselors and people to work at the cafes and people to do Bible studies and people to help with the building. And yeah, if you're interested, see me. I don't need you for a couple of years. So it's not like come tomorrow, you know. It's come in a couple of years. So you think about it. Let it sit in your heart. There's also a project down in Lissa that is happening right now. The government gave us the building. I told you I have found favor with the government. It's a small building, but we're using it as a center for youth and children. It needs about $20,000 in renovations plus to build up a stage. Thus, the offering. Did I mention the offering already? Oh, yeah, about 5 times. The offering at the end of the service. And so I'm going to ask that you would help us. The building is already ours. It's already ours. And by the way, I just found out about it 2 weeks ago. So it's fresh. One of my friends, one of the posse, called me up and said, we got the building in Lissa. I said, okay, I'm raising money for it. Thus, this project in Lissa. Pretty cool, huh? I also do something called Kids Ark. Some of you may remember the name. And now it's in Dutch. How fun. We started it in my church. It's starting in 3 other places. But right now it's happening at my church in Zaandam. And my neighborhood is mostly Muslim. So guess who comes? The Muslim kids. And they keep getting saved. Amazing. But yeah, it's a little bit scary. First of all, a lot of them don't come back a second time. Some of them do. But, you know, it's very scary being a Muslim kid and getting saved. You can't tell your father or he'll kill you, literally. So, prayer request number 2, I need you to pray that I would have some wisdom as to how to deal with the Muslim children. I've taken classes, I've read books, but I need some Holy Ghost wisdom as to how to reach them and keep them and reach their families. Who Who knew? Who knew this was going to be happening in my life? But hey, praise God. I think it's great. Now, the third and last kind of lost is lost and you want to be lost, like that lost son. There was a father. He had two sons. One son said, "Dad, I don't want to wait till you're dead to get my inheritance. Give it to me now." So the father gave him his share of the inheritance. He went out, wasted all the money, just wasted the money till he had no more. He actually had to get a job feeding pigs. He wasn't even allowed to eat the same food the pigs ate. And he thought, my father's servants live better than this. I'm going home. I'm going to beg forgiveness from my father. And he went home probably expecting his father to do something like, well, look who decided to come home. But instead, his father ran to him on the road, embraced him, put a ring on his finger, a robe on his back. My son has come home. My son has come home. Let's have a party for him. I love him so much, and he's come back to me. Now, Holland is a prodigal country. And remember, this is a parable, not necessarily a true story, but a true meaning. And when one prodigal who has known God and walked away comes back, God doesn't say, so how long you staying this time? God says, I love you, I love you, I love you. I'm so glad you're back. So if there's a prodigal in your family, you keep praying because God wants him back more than you do. You keep praying. And Holland is a prodigal country. A few more things about Holland. The suicide rate in Holland is among the highest in the world. Remember, most of them are atheists. It's a social government which works in some respects, but the government takes care of you from birth to death, so you don't even need Jesus. You understand what I mean? And atheism, no belief system. Matter of fact, out of that small 16 million population, 100,000 suicides a year are attempted. And then euthanasia is legal, assisted suicide. That means add another 3,400. People come to Holland so their doctors could kill them. A lot of prodigals. It's a country that has gone very, very far from God. So let me tell you about a prodigal in Castricum, a city in the north of Holland. I was asked to preach at a church in Castricum about 6 months after I moved to Holland. And I said, yes. And I asked my friends, what's Castricum like? And they said, it's a farming village. I said, okay. Farmers still wear the wooden shoes when they do hand farming. And it's kind of a backward rural community. I said, okay. So I'm driving up there several weeks later with a girl who's translating for me. And the Lord speaks to me in the car with a passenger and says, Judy, I want you to share your testimony with these people. I'm a former drug addict, tail end of the hippie movement, miraculously delivered from drugs when I was 20 years old. I said, God, I'm going to a farming community. They have no idea what a quaalude is. How am I going to tell them? And God spoke to me in a New York Jewish accent, which I'm sure he speaks to you with that accent. And he said to me, what did I just tell you? You'll share your testimony? I said, okay. You can fight with God, but think about it. What's the sense? You know, who wins? Yeah, okay. So I get up there and I shared my testimony for about 20 minutes, 15, 20 minutes, went into my sermon, finished. And young man came up to me. By the way, they were all farmers with the beards and the hats and the wives looked similar. And and there was a row of young people, which was a little freaky, but okay. And so the guy comes up to me, clearly not a farmer, and he said, can I talk to you? He spoke English. And he said, I'm a drug addict. I live in Amsterdam. I was stoned last night. I must have gotten on the train to Castricum, found myself on the street this morning, sleeping. I woke up, I heard the music, followed the music into the church, heard your story. I want you to know I used to know God when I was young. Do you think he would take me back and set me free from drugs like he did for you? I said, yep. His name was Yap. I said, yep. And I prayed with him, led him to the Lord. I go back to the church about every 6 months to preach. And I was there about 4 months ago, right before I came to America. And there's Yop. He's an usher. And he's a born-again Christian serving Christ. Why? Because God took him back and didn't say, God said, I love you, I love you, I love you, Yop. And he's there with his family where he was born again. Now, I thought I would close the service by showing you some pictures of where I live. I live in a really cool place, but it's very lost. Some of the pictures are pictures of churches that are empty now, that are museums. Some are my ministry, and some are just kind of cool pictures. And then I will close the service and give it to Pastor Glenn, where he will then instruct you about this offering that is so important to me. I've come here because I need your help. You know, I don't live in a third world country. I have a nice apartment. I have high-speed internet, cable TV. We have good roads, good hospitals. But I live in a very lost country, and I need your help. I read an article several years ago about a little girl who was lost in a rural area, and the townspeople went looking for her, and they couldn't find her. And they were afraid that she was lost in a field and it had started to snow and that she would freeze to death. So what they did, their strategy was this. They lined up the whole town shoulder to shoulder and they linked arms like this and they walked through the field and they found the little girl because they combed the entire area. So this is how I feel about harvest time. I feel like there I am in the field, and Harvest Time Church is linking arms with me, and we are walking through the field, picking up lost girls, boys, Muslims, atheists, prostitutes, drug addicts, and you're helping me. So I want to say thank you, and I want to say keep praying, keep giving. And maybe you'll come in a couple of years to help me for a couple of years. Pastor Glenn?
Thank you, Pastor Judy. Come on, stand together with me on your feet. Let's just express our appreciation today for Pastor Judy. Wasn't that great ministry that she brought to us? Pastor Dan, help us out. Let's sing that song, Jesus, My Shepherd, My Saving Grace. If you know it, sing it with us today.